Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you are going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome into the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast, Thursday, April 14th, this 2022 season, 1 week old. Michael Beller, Al Melchior here with you. We've got a great guest coming up in just a second, but first, got to say what's up to Al. Al, how's it going, man?
Good, good. You said 1 week old. I'm like, nah, not already. I was like, no, it is Thursday, so
yeah.
1 week in the books.
Yeah, we can do this all season long, man. Since it's you and me every Thursday, we can celebrate every That's right. weekly birthday of the 2022 baseball season.
I like it.
This is
like
great. It. Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to today's episode in the 1 week birthday for this 2022 MLB season. Joining us is Greg Jewett. You can find Greg's work here at The Athletic, of course, the reliever guru for us here at The Athletic. Greg, thanks so much for being with us.
Of course, thanks for having me on.
We've scribbled down a handful of bullpens that we wanted to discuss. We know that you've got some in your latest column at The Athletic that our readers should certainly be checking out. Let's get things started fun. Let's get things started with the Houston Astros, where Ryan Pressly came into the year unquestioned as the closer, unquestioned as one of the top closers in the fantasy baseball world. 1 week into the season, do you have any reason to question what you felt about Pressly 2 weeks ago?
Slightly. I mean, even last year, I remember tracking him and got tons of questions in the preseason because he did a lot of his work on the backfields and not in spring training games. So we never really got a read for what was going on, and people were worried if he was hurt, this, that, and the other. Well, this year he repeated that same process. He did most of his work on the backfield. He likes throwing to the guys in the back, getting opinions, whatever. But once he did one appearance in the spring, and we noticed that his velocity was down a little bit, and that's continued. He's averaging about 92 miles per hour with his fastball, and he had been doing okay his first couple of outings, but then last night in Arizona, he was not throwing strikes. I think he threw five strikes out of his 15 pitches, which is very rare for him. So the lack of command, I don't know if there's something that we're not hearing about as far as the velocity. I mean, we saw that they gave him the two-year extension, so that kind of let everybody take a breath of relief and say, okay, well, Houston wouldn't give him an extension if there was an issue with that elbow or anything else. So he went from his first couple of outings, he threw 26 pitches with 20 strikes. And then again, like I said, last night, he threw 15 with only five. So that harpooned his strike percentage. And it causes a little bit more concern. So we don't know if this was the second time, you know, he faced the Diamondbacks on back-to-back outings. Maybe they made an adjustment, or if this is something that's going to linger going forward. So basically, the long story short is if you have Ryan Pressly, it probably would not be a bad idea to back him up with Hector Neris this weekend.
That was where I wanted to go with that. Do you think that that's a move not just for people who currently are rostering Pressly, but just looking for saves wherever they can find them?
Yeah, if you're in a very competitive league where every save matters, then I would say yes, because even if Pressly is healthy, they're not going to, I would gather to say they're not going to push him. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of back to back. And after this consecutive outings, he might get 2 days off, which is common with a lot of relievers. So that means Neris is a little younger, a little fresher, and they brought him in there as a clear backup, I believe, for this role. And obviously the Astros are a forward-thinking organization. I figured they would maximize his pitch mix better than the Phillies did last season. And so I think that would put Neris in a position to either get you ancillary saves, or if Pressly gets a couple weeks off to reset and relax, then he would definitely get full run as the closer in the interim.
Someone who you grouped with Pressly in your most recent column at The Athletic was Craig Kimbrell, for mm-hmm. some of the similar reasons that you just talked about with Pressly, a veteran who is dealing with some slightly decreased velocity here in the first week of the season, which is not a crazy thing for really any pitcher, and certainly a pitcher with the mileage that Kimbrel has on his arm to be dealing with. But it's still something that's worth considering, at least worth paying attention to. How closely do you pay attention to that with a guy specifically with Kimbrel's track record?
There's two parts to that. I remember last year when he was struggling in the spring, because I did take him in one of my leagues, so I paid laser close attention to him. When he struggles, A, the velocity is down, and then B, his fastball tails instead of rides. And when that happens, when it tails, it leaks into the strike zone, and he gives up more extra base hits and things of that nature. So, but what I did share within the article was the fact that his ERA kind of goes in lockstep with his velocity, and you can see that. So if he's sitting if he's averaging 95, 96, that gives him a much shorter leash for success, and that's just something. We don't know how this compressed spring training is going to affect people, and you know, his first outing in spring with the Dodgers did not go well, but he turned things around a little bit. And I do believe in the Dodgers front office, like the Cubs, they're pretty good at maximizing their pitchers and what they produce. So I'm thinking they will get him on the right track, but we just want to, the first couple of weeks, we just want to pay close attention to his results, and then also close attention to, is his velocity ticking up as time moves along this season?
Greg, there's a couple of relievers who are currently on the IL who back in spring training look like they might be in line to at least share a closer's job. So Dylan Floro with the Marlins, Lucas Sims with the Reds, both could be back by the end of the month. Are they waiver targets at this point?
If from a purely save standpoint, Floro's probably a bit more intriguing just because Mattingly's pretty faithful and he takes a linear path, which is, you know, A to B to C, which us as fantasy players prefer. Not that that's the new wave of analytics has really harpooned a lot of those traditional steps to the closer. So if that's the case and Floro is healthy and Bender keeps struggling, he had a tough loss the other day. Again, same thing. Threw nine pitches, only three were strikes, and one of them was a wild pitch to put the runner on third base. That's not optimal from your closer or perceived closer. So I would probably give him a little more preference if that was the case. Now, Sims is supposed to be back by the 22nd, according to the Athletics' C. Trent Rosenkranz, so that's also something to monitor. He made his first rehab outing yesterday at AAA Louisville. Velocity reports seemed okay. Same thing. Now, Sims last year, his first stint on the IL was after they used him three times in 4 days, so I don't know that he can handle a traditional closer-ish role, and not to mention the fact that he was the best Reds reliever in the second half last year, and they kept giving save chances to Givens and Lorenzen. Saves are kind of fungible to the Reds, so if you're taking Sims, you just have to understand that he might only get one save chance a week or two save chances a week. If there's four, it's they're not just going to say Sims is our guy and go with it. That just has not been David Bell's MO.
Sticking on that for a second, who in Cincinnati, if there is anyone, do you trust to be, you know, enough of everything? Because I think we all sort of assume that Cincinnati's not going to have a dedicated closer maybe at any point this season. So who in this pen can do enough of everything? Enough save opportunities, enough Ks, good enough ratios to be roster worthy in just a standard sized league?
In a 12 team league, the one nice thing that we've seen is Tony Santion is the highest leverage reliever, which means he's going to face the best part of a lineup, whether it's a seventh, eighth, or ninth inning. And they've shown that. So he does have a save already. As a reliever, he's much better because his slider plays up in that role. I mean, we forget that he had a 12 strikeout outing last year as a starter. So we know his fastball and slider can work. In shorter bursts, it's even better. So he's filling what has been tabbed the TJ Antone role, which, you know, Antone was a very popular preseason target last year. So Santion is that guy. So he might get 10 saves this year. He might get 7 vulture wins. And we know he's going to be in those leverage situations. You know, I know we got excited about Art Warren getting his first save on Sunday. And then his next outing, he was in the seventh inning. So we can't guarantee where he'll be. And guess who pitched the eighth inning that day? It was Santillan going against the heart of the order. And then they tried to get cute using Hunter Strickland, and he imploded in the ninth. So the ninth inning is more fungible to the Reds, but at least we know that David Bell and staff trust Santillan as their HLR, which is a term that me and Brandon Funston agreed to last year when we were talking about the bullpen stuff. and it's just the easiest way to do it. So I try and put it in every article of what the definition of what that person is, because bullpens keep changing. So how we treat them has to change accordingly as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I want to shift focus to a team that maybe has a similar kind of bullpen structure, and that's the Mariners. And now, granted, it is a bold prediction, so you know, you take that for what it's worth. But one of my bold predictions was that Paul Sewald would walk away with 20 saves this year. After week one, that's not looking so hot. He's got to pick up the pace because he's got to get almost one a week. But it's no surprise to see Scott Servais go to different relievers in the ninth inning. But how's that prediction looking to you right now?
It can happen, but last year, I believe, and I had that in the article as well, after they traded for Diego Castillo, I put that specifically in there. So I think Sewald had 7 saves. Steckenrider ended up with 11, and Castillo got 2. Sewald is very akin to Santillan, as in he's their HLR. So if they need him in the eighth inning to face 3, 4, 5 batters, that's where he'll be. And that's what happened when Steckenrider got the first save. Sewald did the heavy lifting, and Steckenrider came in against the bottom third of the lineup and walked away with a save. This happens a lot with Seattle. So you need the heart of the order matching up in the ninth inning for Paul to get those save opportunities, which he can. I would say a more realistic number would be 15 as his max, but you're not far off and asking too much. And we'll see how that happens. And I do like one thing here. They've pretty much said that they will not use Andrés Muñoz on back-to-back outings early because they're letting him cut his teeth in high leverage. But he's got the highest swing strike rate in that bullpen, even in his limited exposure so far in the majors, and that kid's electric. I think by second half, he might end up being the arm to own in his bullpen, and they can really put Sewald into that HLR plus role and use him whenever they want. But yeah, we'll see how all that shake out, but trusting one person in that bullpen comes with a lot of apprehension.
Al, let me just tell you right now, as we're recording 2:23 p.m. where I am in the Central Time Zone, Mariners are up 2-0 on the White Sox in the fourth inning. So there you go.
All right, can you project ahead who's going to be on the nine?
That's right. We can get your first one today. That'd be fantastic.
There you go. Maybe he's going to get that opportunity. Let's stick on those HLRs for a second here, Greg. In that latest column, among the teams with HLRs, you have listed Orioles, Cubs, Reds, Royals, Pirates, Mariners, Cardinals, and Rays. In that group of pitchers, in that group of guys who are currently serving as a non-closing HLR, which one would you handicap as the most likely to leave behind the HLR role and move into a traditional closer's role, if you think any of them will?
To me, the most likely would be Gallegos, even though the team repeatedly, I mean, the closer by calculation tabulation that was put out by Derek Gould early in the preseason, Marmol, the new manager, saying the same exact thing, saying no one's going to have defined roles. But in the first time they did it, it was Gallegos. And what he did in September, I think, can't be ignored. Mm-hmm. The biggest threat to me right there would be is there will come times where, say, they're playing the Cubs or one of their division rivals that they really want to have that game in the heart of the order. Like, say, a Suzuki's coming up in the eighth inning. They're going to put Gallegos in there, and then you might see Ryan Helsley come in and get the save in the ninth. So just plan on those things. If you treat these guys with how the team uses them, it just makes it easier so you don't get on tilt every time when they don't get the save chance because – again, a lot of these organizations, and Alec Lewis does a great job covering the Royals for The Athletic. He writes about this all the time, saying that there's not going to be one set path to the ninth inning. They use matchups. So it might be, hey, Michael, you match up best with the 1-2-3 hitters in this series. So that's where you're going to, that's who you're going to face in the late innings. Al, you match up best with the 3-4-5. And then Greg, you match up best with the bottom of the lineup. So that's when we play the Guardians this weekend, that's your role. But he tells them before the series, but they do it on a series by series thing. And so people, you know, they draft Scott Barlow thinking he's going to be the closer based on September last year. But that's just not the case because they had a bunch of injuries.
So one team that I've really avoided is the Athletics, avoided them in my drafts. Lou Trevino was clearly going to be the guy there, but I just figured there wasn't really enough potential to rack up saves. But so far, again, 1 week into the season, that offense has been a lot better than I think a lot of people expected it to be. Now, could completely revert in week two here, but if they can keep that going, is there anybody in that bullpen that you like long term?
I really like the upside of the potential of AJ Puck, but they keep trying to use him in multiple innings. When he goes in one inning, he does usually a little better in his results, and he even showed that in spring. The longer he stays out there, the little bit more he gets exposed. Zach Jackson has done a nice job as a rookie coming in. I just don't know if he has the stuff to be the closer. And I understand what you're saying, Al, because at some point you have to think Oakland's going to trade Trevino. I mean, if they're not going to compete this year, keeping him around in the ninth inning with his lack of swing and miss stuff, he's much better suited being a setup reliever on a contender rather than a closer on Oakland. So I understand why you did that, and it was the right process, and I think you just stick to it. What I'm really hoping is whoever they end up trading Trevino to, or if they end up trading Frankie Montas, that they'll get a good reliever back that could probably slot in and move up there. That's always been Oakland's MO. They try and target major league ready relievers in trade and get them right into those leverage innings. So the long story short is the closer on this team may not be on the roster as it's presently constructed.
How excited are you about Joan Duran?
Very, since he's already been in three of my articles. But and if he ends up not being the closer, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Even if he's a part of the thing. I mean, again, when you see talent like this, it doesn't just fall out of trees. So, I mean, I can't just say, hey, this guy throws 102 miles an hour and he's got this nasty splinker and, you know, he could be okay someday. I mean, his first outing, he came out, gave up hits to the first two guys he faced. And we've seen a lot of people melt down in that major league debut. A couple runners get on and they panic and he just settled in. He struck out four people in a row. And I was just like, oh, okay. So not only does he have talent, but he has moxie. And I believe in the stuff. And I'm willing to wait until even May if I have to. But I think once he gets into the ninth inning mix, that it'll be very hard for Rocco Baldelli to take that away from him. I mean, Emilio Pagan, Tyler Duffy. I mean, those guys just don't have the stuff that this kid does to handle those late innings.
Let's take a look at the Nationals, where it appears that Tanner Rainey's in the driver's seat there. He hasn't walked anybody yet, just three innings, but you work with what you have, I guess. And that to me is very encouraging. Is he something? He's pretty widely available still. Is he somebody people should be targeting this weekend?
Yeah, I've always been Team Rainey. I mean, he really flashed in 2020, and again, that's a very limited small sample, but he had a tremendous K minus BB rate that year, and then you know last year he got hurt early on, and I think there was a COVID case. I mean, it was like a lost season. And then in the spring, his velocities were down a little bit when he started out, and then the panic button set in, and I ended up taking him in a DC because I needed a second closer with upside, because I don't know if everybody just noticed that I was in it. So I was on the wrong end of both closer runs. So I had to do something. So I reached a little bit above his ADP to get him just because I believe in the stuff. And you said the key, if he's throwing strikes, then that changes everything because that unlocks his slider. And I think you'll see a little bit more swing and miss stuff as the year progresses with him. And I just hope the kid stays healthy and keeps throwing strikes. So that's why I was knocking on my head when you were reading off that thing. But, you know, I've always been Team Rainey, so I'm hoping that continues.
David Robertson has picked up a couple of saves for the Cubs. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, those are the Cubs' only save opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
To this is. Point of the season, right? Yep. So, I mean, two for two and both save opportunities going to David Robertson, the second of which was just 2 days after he had pitched in a non-save spot. I mean, is David Ross telling us something here?
I hope so. And the only reason I labeled Robertson as the HLR just for now, and these are always subject to change, was that that day you referenced when he pitched in the non-save outing. He went in the eighth inning, but he went against the heart of the lineup against the other team. So I, that just raised my radar a little bit, saying, well, I'm just going to – I don't want to label him the closer until either Ross says it or he just continually keeps getting them. So I don't want to go on record and say today that now Robertson's the closer, and then tonight they give the save chance to Givens, and everyone's like, what the hell is Jewett talking about? So I'll keep him where he is, but I'm, when they signed Givens and Robertson, all that told me was that Wick was not their guy. Mm-hmm. And that's been 100% correct so far. And he pitched yesterday in a non-save outing and gave up a hit and a walk. His whip last year, even when he got a chance to close some of the games, made me nervous. So I thought Cody Hewer would displace him for the closer role in the preseason. And then when Hewer went down with the injury and then they added Givens and Robertson, that again tilted me, leaned me towards saying it's not Wick. So it had to be one of these guys that they're bringing in.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
So, you know, talked a little before about the Oakland situation and maybe there being a closer later on that's not in that roster right now. Do you see the Diamondbacks in a similar situation? I don't know what the plan is going to be with Mark Melancon, but the first three appearances, he hasn't really been as sharp as we've been accustomed to. So I do have some concern there.
Definitely. And you know, he's never been a big velocity guy, but his cutter's averaging 2 miles per hour lower than last year. And that's just, I mean, if he can't get inside and he's losing 2 miles per hour, then, you know, it's not as effective inside. And now batters can turn on those instead of grounding out to the shortstop, which is one of the, you know, I've always joked that ground balls and guile is what's kept him in the ninth inning. If that disappears with the velocity drop and it doesn't come back, then we're in a little bit of trouble, especially because Ian Kennedy's not bad, but he's a fly ball pitcher. I was hoping Kennedy would end up in Miami or somewhere else where the ballpark would help insulate his skill set and if they were going to make him a closer, but that didn't happen. So I'm nervous about that bullpen as a whole. I really don't know. Now, what I will say is there was a guy in spring training that popped late. His name was Dre Jameson. He was hitting triple digits, and that's just somebody that we want to keep our eyes on. If he does really well in AAA, and they can get Melancon and Kennedy moved before the trade deadline for pieces for the future, that kid may be somebody who comes up and excites us the way that Duran and Strider have so far early on.
Yeah, we're always looking for those guys who, you know, second mm-hmm. two-thirds of the season surgers. We know they are coming, and so it's good. It's a good class of players to have your eye on, have in the back of your head. And in that same vein, you know, one, two, maybe more than that of those guys could end up being guys who move into high leverage roles or even dedicated closer roles. Who's your favorite or maybe a couple of favorite guys to speculate on right now as guys who can also maybe give you some value right now, but could also ultimately mature into ninth inning roles for their respective teams?
Let's see here. A lot of this hinges on the trade deadline, but I really like what I've seen so far out of Dylan Coleman in Kansas City. Now, again, we know that they're not going to go with a defined closer, but in the second half, if this team does struggle and their starting pitching right now doesn't really show me that they're going to be in contention this year, mm-hmm. even though we're excited about Bobby Witt Jr. and everything else is going on with the lineup, If that's the case, then Scott Barlow, I believe, is in his arbitration window, which would make him an obvious trade candidate. So then all of a sudden, a guy like Dylan Coleman might be able to jump ahead of Stallmont and other people in that bullpen. He was in my early season guys to keep an eye on for the future. And even the other day when the whole bullpen imploded, Coleman at least turned in a clean outing with two strikeouts before Brents and Stallmont and Barlow all gave up two runs each in that thing. This one's he's not young, but in Texas, I know everybody's kind of waiting for Joe Barlow to retake over that ninth inning, but Garrett Richards is probably going to come back off of the injured list maybe today. He worked in AAA 2 days ago. There's rumors that it wasn't really a blister. It was that he wasn't vaccinated and couldn't go to Canada, whatever. That's between him and the team. But they brought him in originally to be a multi-inning reliever, but in spring training, all of his outings were one inning or less. So, oh goodness, my dog, hold on. How dare somebody walk by the front of the house? So Richards, I think, could come up and get into leverage innings with the Rangers. He may not get saves right when he gets called up or brought back to the roster, but I do think that he's a sleeper to kind of come in there and get some of those save situations. And who else? I'm trying to look here. Not Boston. I don't know what to do with Baltimore because they're just always a mess. And we gave you Dre Jameson. And if something happens with Kimbrel, I mean, we have to be ready for Daniel Hudson. And if something did happen to Kimbrel long term, that he gets shut down or it just can't get his velocity back or whatever the case. Worst case scenario, in the second half, I really like what Bruzdar Gradual's been doing. I feel like we've been waiting for him for years. But I would like to see a little bit more swing and miss stuff from him. But the easy velocity and the fact that, you know, I mean, he looks like he's just out there doing slow pitch softball and all of a sudden he's throwing 99 miles per hour and it's on you without anything. And I mentioned it before with the Cardinals. I think Ryan Helsley could be a sleeper if they really do keep Gallegos in the HLR role, that at least he can get you double digit saves possibly. His cutter this year looks fantastic. He's working with increased velocity, unlike most of the people we've been talking about today. And we know the Cardinals play close games. So if he gets on a heater, he can get you a couple saves in a week. And that's huge when it's somebody that we don't think is in the role, but grabs those on the side.
So I want to talk a little bit more just about the reliever pool in general and looking for saves in FAB right now. This goes back to a conversation that I had with Derek Van Riper on one of the episodes, I think last week. And I was saying that this year I'm planning on just kind of hanging back the first maybe 2 or 3 weeks as far as relievers go, not spending a lot, because I feel like that is an error that I make every year, which is I get too aggressive in speculating, getting too maybe a little too panicky over saves when new closers are being churned out throughout the season. Or at least that's an assumption that I'm making. What approach are you taking in the first few weeks?
Well, if you were savvy enough or got, you know, the right targets in your draft, hopefully you're not panicking either. So I ended up with a lot of Taylor Rogers. I ended up with, you know, I got Jordan Romano in the TGFBI, things of that nature. So I didn't really, I do have some hater shares, but that was just based on how the drafts shook out. It wasn't like I went in there saying I had to have Josh Hader. It was the fact that he dropped to a point where I was comfortable enough with that price point that I added him to my roster. So I've got a lot of Corey Knebel, things of that nature. So I think you are right. And then I think a savvy thing you can do right now is just grab a guy like Brad Hand. That's going to be the second guy behind Knebel. He's going to get, you know, Knebel appeared in back-to-back outings twice last year in a regular season. I mean, Philadelphia cannot run him into the ground, and they know that. So Brad Hand's going to get save opportunities because he has background with the pitching coach, and that's why he went there. He helped him reshape his slider in the offseason. You know, am I saying Brad Hand's a top closer? No, but I'm saying if he gets you a save a week when you didn't pay for them, then that's something that you can that you can benefit from. So pay attention to all these guys. You know, also I will say this. You know, and it's good that you're waiting because guess what? You know, the Yankees are starting out okay, but Aroldis Chapman's in a walk year. guess who else is going to walk here? Edwin Diaz. So, I mean, if anything happens where the Mets or the Yankees don't do or contend where the team wanted them to be, there's a very good chance those guys get traded. Then all of a sudden we're worried about, is it Seth Lugo or Drew Smith in the ninth inning, or is it going to be Jonathan Loaisiga? And by the way, Mr. Boone, can you please not use Jonathan Loaisiga four out of the last 6 days? I mean,
we need Dave Roberts in New York.
He wore him down last September. Let's not do that again, please. Because I'm a big Loaisiga fan, but you can't keep putting the poor kid out there. And luckily, I was able to predict the Daniel Bard thing. I named him the closer a couple weeks ago on Reliever Recon, and thankfully that came to fruition. I mean, I got a couple of late shares of him as my third closer. So, you know, I'm going to join you, Al, and just kind of wait patiently. I did get one inexpensive bid on Duran last weekend, so I'm hoping that one will come around. But in the other one, I got outbid by somebody who was trying to be as sneaky as me, so that one hurt a little bit. But yeah, take a patient approach. Don't go out and burn triple digits of your $1,000 fab on the closer du jour. Do the homework and figure out. And the biggest mistake people made last year was chasing the red saves from last week, not who might be coming up this week. And that's the hardest thing to do, because you want to, oh, okay, that guy got the saves last week, so he's the guy. And then all of a sudden this week is this guy, and you're like, damn it. So, you know,
all that draft capital and then fab capital on Amir Garrett.
Yeah, it didn't work out. And even though he anointed himself the closer, again, it's David Bell is a manager that I've learned to have very little trust in.
Who ends up this season with the most saves in Boston?
Right now, I'm still going to say Barnes, just because I think that they will run best if he's there, because then they can match up with Robles and Diekman in the seventh and eighth however they want to. But I think we need one more mile per hour back on his velo. He has had two nice outings since the season started, coming back from that back tightness, or however the Red Sox wanted to label it. I think it was more about the velocity than his back. But I think they want him back there. It's just a matter of, can we get him back there with the velo? I'll stay with him for now, but that's subject to change. Yeah. And it's hard, you know, and Al knows I was a big Robles fan back in the day when we worked together at Fangraphs, and he's put together 18 consecutive regular season scoreless outings. So as much as he makes me nervous, he has been better with the Red Sox.
I did not have that on my bingo card. By the way, just one quick and completely irrelevant Hansel Robles observation, because I was looking at him earlier today, looking at his page on Fangraphs, and thinking back to, I think it was 2019, where he had that really good year from the Angels that I feel like at the time people weren't giving him enough credit for, it because it was, you know, it was better than people were expecting. It was he didn't walk very many people that year, which was not the pattern. He's gone back to not having the best control. And I'm like, this seems really familiar. And then I went and I looked up Fernando Rodney's page and the 2012 season he had with the Rays. I'm like, okay, that was his Fernando Rodney Rays season that he had with the Angels.
Yep. Yeah, I don't think that iteration of Robles is ever coming back. But if we can keep him at about a 1.2 whip and ancillary save chances, I think he's much better suited. He's very good in the matchup things. And same with Diekman. Like Diekman, one night Diekman can look like, Billy Wagner, and then the next night he looks like he should be throwing in an independent league. So it's all about command with Diekman. But when he's on, like that, the game against the Yankees, when he struck out Judge and Stanton, I mean, he's lights out. But when he's off, like he was yesterday in Detroit, then it's a little shakier. Little shakier outing.
Yeah, that Boston situation is going to be one that we're watching very closely and maybe never shakes out perfectly exactly for the fantasy world or for the Red Sox. We're just about done here, Greg, but I got to ask you this. So you put out one of my go-to draft day resources the last couple of seasons has been your full ranking of relievers for saves and holds. Not just saves, not just reliever rankings there, but saves, holds. I love that. I have that by my side because my home league, the league I care about the most, is a saves holds league. Okay. So I know you do that, but I don't know the answer to this. Are you in favor of saves holds? Are you a saves hold zealot the way that I am? That feels like a no off the bat.
Nah, it's not a no. But you know, holds can be just as goofy as saves because I can come in and give up, I can give up two hits and whatever and come out after one third of an inning and get a hold. But then yesterday, I forget who it was, gets a blown save, but he came in with two people on and induced a sacrifice fly and got a strikeout. It's like, how is that worse than what the guy who gave up base runners and left and somebody else saved his bacon? He gets a hold, but this person gets a blown save. So it's an imperfect world. Yep. The nice thing about solds is if you do a league with solds and then you actually have something like a K-minus BB where you're really identifying who the best pitchers are, then I'm all for it. If you're just playing the traditional strikeouts, then it waters it down a little bit. But at least with solds, you're recognizing guys who are pitching in the late inning with that role, and they are being rewarded for it. So in that case, I totally understand and get it.
I don't think we can get this perfect with the way bullpens are used these days. It's just we're going to have to settle for an imperfection here, imperfection there, whatever you are using as a category. But my argument is that adding holds is a way to reverse engineer reliever value to better reflect their value to their real life teams, right? Like Pierce Johnson should have some value. Yes. Aaron Bummer should have some value. Guys like that should have value in the fantasy world because they have immense value to their teams.
Right, and you don't want David Bednar being tethered to just getting a save because there's going to be a lot of times that the Pirates will use him in the eighth inning against the best part of the lineup, and then he gets a hold instead, and you as a traditional player are like, cursing because Pittsburgh used him in that role, not the traditional. Paul Sewell gets much more value. Yeah, and in solds, you just want guys on good teams that are going to get the reps.
Two to one.
Everybody in the Mariners gets pushed up in that format because now you're not worried if they're in the seventh, eighth, or ninth. You're just happy that they're pitching in leverage.
There you go. 2-1 in that game, by the way. I don't know how the White Sox got the run, but it's 2-1 now. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on that over these next couple innings. Al, you got to join the Solds revolution. It's the wave of the future, my friend.
All right, I'll tell you real quickly. I was already a year or two ago to completely buy into it. And I was in the Tout Wars Solds League last year. And I felt like it was overcompensation. Like I, you know, the scarcity and arbitrariness of rewarding saves is something that I applaud when leagues try to correct for that. But I feel like now what Greg was talking about with also having K minus BB, I think that's a good adjustment.
It's a good mix.
But to just reward solds, there's no scarcity there. I mean, there's a lot of really good relievers who can pick up holds and put up good peripherals. And that kind of takes the fun out of it too. So, yeah, it's unfortunately you have to wind up kind of legislating that to death to make it more interesting.
You find a way to make it work for your league, whatever that might be. That's going to do it here for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Greg Jewett, thanks so much for joining us. Other than everything you do for us here at the Athletic, where can our listeners find your work?
Just the weekly column on the Athletic, and then myself and four other contributors, we launched a site called Reliever Recon on Patreon. It's a monthly fee, but we put out information every day, and it includes my closer charts, which update every day in real time, and I give you little game recaps on there. So there's all kinds of information. We have a guy in there. If you play in a daily league with pickups every day, he focuses on all the guys. He calls him a fruit, which is the first reliever out of the pen. The guys who get those vulture wins right now. And we see how few teams are letting their starters go 5-6 innings. So all of a sudden, if you have two or three of these guys that come in and steal those wins in your league, it's a huge advantage in leagues that don't prohibit pickups. So all kinds of information comes out on there daily. We have a bunch of esteemed high rolling players that subscribe to the site. So it's cool and it's fun. And yeah, we put out tons of content, and it's great. I have great contributors, and we have a great time with it.
There you go. Be sure to check that out, Reliever Recon, all of Greg's work here at The Athletic, and, of course, follow him on Twitter at gjewett, J-E-W-E-T-T-9. Greg, thanks again for being with us on The Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Michael, and always great to reconnect with Al. We've worked together at two different places, so it's always fun.
Three now.
Three now. I said, we worked together.
Sorry. Just accentuating it.
There you go. 1, 2, 3. It is absolutely beautiful. Thanks to all of you as well for being with us on this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are back at you again tomorrow. Al, and DVR breaking down this weekend's waiver wire. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back.